Welcome to today's edition of Front Porch Talks. I'm Grayson Willis. Today's edition of Front Porch Talks took place on Saturday evening, October 22nd, 2016. It was the fall retreat for our youth from Harrisonburg First Church of the Nazarene and took place at Watermark's Camp in Scottsville, Virginia. In the Saturday evening service of fall retreat, Pastor Drew Ritter, who's the pastor of Livingstone Church of the Nazarene in Verona, came and continued the series about faith being greater than fear.
Yo, holla! Everybody good? Yes. Lost you already? How about the worship team? You like them? We like them! Wow, cool. I like light too. How's it been today? You able to find some things to do? Everybody get a good shot at Sam? Everybody's happy. Everybody's made the most of their day. Yes? Some things to do? Focus. And you have fun. Focus. Everybody had a good day? What was your best part? Most fun of the day? Right now. Yes. Okay, so. Hope you've had fun. I hope you've had some time to think also. Maybe you got some time out in the wilderness, in the wild, to ponder a few things we've talked about this week, maybe, this weekend. Just as a little recap, since most of you have been here. We've been talking about unpacking fear and anxiety, mostly. And this morning, we talked about the value, and actually the necessity, of getting to the root of whatever it is, whatever fear that plagues you. Does everybody know what I mean by that? We talked about setting houses on fire. We had great time this morning, right? Getting to the bottom of whatever it is that is causing you anxiety. Because anxiety comes from misplaced fears and things that you don't know where to put. Right? We can agree on all this. That's just a quick recap. Okay. So, tonight I'm going to shift gears a little bit. Instead of talking about diagnosing why you're afraid or why you have anxiety, I want to spend a little bit of time talking about what you can do about it, which is great fun, right? By the way, this is the last chance that I will get to speak with all of you collectively, and so I want to thank you for the opportunity. It's really been fun. I've enjoyed getting to know some of you a little better and reconnecting with some of you that I knew before, and it's been awesome. So thank you for your attentiveness and time we've gotten to spend together. Just wanted to get that while I had everybody's attention, get it out there. So tonight, as I said, we're going to look a little bit different, a little different point of view, speaking of anxiety, starting a little bit with, just want to tell you, I told you I would give you a bunch of when I was a kid stories, and I've almost exhausted those because I really didn't have a very exciting childhood. So other than catching the house on fire, there really isn't much to talk about. I was the youngest child in my family. My brother, 3 years older than me, played football. He looked like he was 20 when he was 10. He was shaving, and he was bulky and thick and strong. And I was not. Remember, when he was 10, I was 7. And when I graduated from high school, I was 5'7", and I might weigh 100 pounds. I don't think so. I grew really, really late. I think it was 5 or 6 inches my freshman year of college. So, in all that to say, my brother, in love, growing up, how many of you have pet names that you were called by your siblings? Yeah. My brother called me Runt. Which is, I mean, it's funny. Now, looking back on it, it's humorous. And it makes me laugh even, and he still does sometimes. It's particularly humorous now because my brother is 5'6". So the great monster that I once knew, I can now look right over his head. He's still thicker than me, rather significantly now. And his center of gravity is much lower than mine. It always has been. So he can flip me to the floor in a second. I could lay down flat on the floor and his center of gravity would still be lower than mine. I have no idea how he does it, but he can put me on my back in a second. But that's another story for another day. He still occasionally calls me Runt, and we get a laugh out of it, and so forth. But can I tell you something, honestly? Can we be, like, wide open here? That hurt a lot when I was little, because he was good at football, and people admired, in my mind, much bigger probably than reality, people admired football players. And, you know, well, you know, right? You know. And he called me Runt, and I internalized that until I believed that. And what is a runt? A runt is sickly and small and weak and incapable. So I believed that. I believe that I was destined. And everybody in my family is a bunch of little sawed-off people. They're all these little short. I was born into a family of gnomes, I'm absolutely certain. All these little people. So I was pretty sure by the time I was 16, 17, if I was only this tall, that that's how it was going to be for me. And the only thing different about me from the rest of my family is I had little narrow shoulders and little narrow waist and little narrow nothing. Like, there was nothing. There was no mass. And all of my cousins and everybody else are these strong, little Mighty Mouse people. And I was totally not. So actually, I pretty much did live up to the title. And it was bothersome. I never said it. I never told anybody. Actually, you are the first people I have ever said this to. I have never said this to anyone else. But I believe that I was a runt.
I was the last born.
It was, you know, it just fell right in line.
I believed that I would never amount to anything. I have absolute zero athletic ability, and in my family, that is punishable. not really, but it felt like it at the time. I played the trombone in high school, and I couldn't reach the bottom two notes. So I just had to skip those, because, you know, it's amazing what God can do. Give him enough time and eat enough bacon, and who knows? Yes. Look at Joe. I mean, it's amazing. Who knows? So, yeah. Anyway, that's the past. That's a teeny little piece of my story.
My brother did not mean to hurt me any more than any other brother means to, you know, at the moment maybe, but he did not mean to scar me for my life. But I guess an argument could be made that he did. The only thing that I had was I had really sharp elbows, and I still do. And I could run fast, because that was just self-preservation.
In that family, you best move, because a dog pile, you don't want to be on the bottom. So, yeah, I had really sharp elbows, and I could still take him out with my elbows if I had to. And sometimes I still do. But anyway,
things we believe. I told you this morning, well, I asked you a question. If people judge you, so what? So what? And now I'm telling you the other side of that. But here's the thing that I want to make sure you get. Fear and anxiety only has as much power as you give it. Did you hear what I just said? Did you get what I just said? There are fears in life. There are practical fears like snakes, lightning, fire, that you can't do anything about. Like, lightning happens, right? And it has effects that are very significant. And so you would be wise to get out of the lake during a thunderstorm. And you can say that you do that because you're afraid, and that's okay. That's scary. Get off the lake if it's storming. With me? But fear that somebody won't like you, whether or not that affects you is your decision. If people judge you, whether or not that affects you is your decision. I know it doesn't feel like it all the time. Because I know, I just told you, I know how that felt. I know how that feels. But it is your decision. What you do with it, it is your decision how much it affects your life. Do you hear me talking? You hear what I'm saying? Okay, so we'll get into that a little more in a minute. I want to talk to you out of Luke tonight. It's a little different angle.
Because I'm going to speak in metaphor.
What's a metaphor? Who's in my Bible class? Where's Dan? What's a metaphor? Sorry, it's a word picture that's like something else, but it's not really.
Luke chapter 23.
Jesus is about to be crucified. This shouldn't be a big shock to you. It's the only place that this is recorded in the Bible, though.
So, of all the Gospels, it's only recorded in one place. Jesus is about to be crucified. And we pick it up here, verse 32.
He's being walked out so that the crucifixion can take place. Like, the sentencing has all been done. Now they're walking out so they can actually be crucified. Pick it up at verse 32. Two other men, both criminals, were also led out with him to be executed. When they came to the place called Golgotha, which means the skull, there they crucified him, along with the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." Now let's skip down a little bit to verse 39, if you're reading along. One of the criminals, now they have been nailed to the cross. What I'm skipping is actually the nailing two crosses. You know what I'm talking about, right? We don't need an image on this. So the three of them nailed to their crosses. Verse 39, one of the criminals hung there, insulted Jesus, saying, "Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself and us." But the other criminal rebuked him and said, "Don't you fear God? We are here under the same sentence he is. We are punished justly. We are getting what our wrong deeds deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong." And then he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And Jesus answered, "I tell you the truth, today you will be with me in paradise." This is kind of a dark moment in our story of redemption. But it's a beautiful moment in our story of redemption. We don't know the names of these two criminals. And I think that's on purpose. If you will allow me the poetic license to speak in metaphor. I don't think there's anything in the Bible that is wasted. I think every word is there for us. And God has something to say. We don't know the names of these two guys. But you know this really happened. All right, can we get agreement on that? This really happened. This is not a fun story or a not so fun story. These people really existed. Their pain and their suffering was real. And these things that they said, they really said. This happened on a very dark day in eternity. All right? There's a reason that we know about them. Lots of people say that we know about this to give us some illumination about heaven and what heaven is coming. And that may be, I don't want to say that that is inaccurate. But I think it tells us more. I think it tells us something that's a little sooner than that. 2 Corinthians 6, 1 and 2 says, "As God's co-workers, we urge you not to receive God's grace in vain. For he says, 'In the time of my favor, I heard you. And in the day of salvation, I helped you. I tell you now,'" say that with me, "now." Oh, come on. "Now is the time of my favor." He says, "Now is the time of my favor. Now is the day of my salvation." That's a quote directly from Isaiah 49, which, by the way, was written 800 years before Jesus was born. And he says, "Now." Do you live like now is the day of the Lord's salvation? Only you can answer that question. Do you live like now is the day of the Lord's favor? Do you realize that Christ died on the cross for you? And he would have done that for just you? Do you know why he did that? In part, yes, so that you can live with God forever, in all eternity, in heaven, which is awesome. But also, so that you can live in communion with God now, right now, in all of your struggling and your anxiety and your stuff and your junk, God wants to live in communion with you now. Now, today, is the day of God's favor for you, for me, for you, for you. Today is the day of God's favor. Do you believe that? And if you believe that, if we believe that, then why do we have so much problem with fear and anxiety? Why do we give so much value to the opinions of other people? If we know that we are loved and adored by the Creator of everything that ever was and ever will be. We need to get the fact that God's redemption is for us now. Here's our problem. And I'm borrowing this thought from Eugene Peterson. Maybe you know Eugene Peterson wrote the Message paraphrase. It's like Wide Awake. And it's great fun. It's a fun read as long as you're not studying it. I don't recommend you do deep theological study on it, but it's kind of fun to read sometimes. But he has a brilliant thought. This is not part of the message, but he says, I'm not sure I get it right. Now, our now is being crucified between two thieves, yesterday and tomorrow. Our lives, we live hanging between two thieves, yesterday and tomorrow. We live in a day, right now, where God's perfect redemption for all of our anxiety and all of our fear and all of our concerns and all of our has been dealt with. It has been dealt the fatal blow. And yet, we live like none of that happened because we are squeezed between the guilt of yesterday and the fear of tomorrow. Can I get a witness or am I the only one? We're stuck in the middle between yesterday and tomorrow. They are thieves that are stealing our lives, yours and mine. They suck the life and the beauty and the wonder out of now. Yes? Can you relate to this? And frankly, it ticks me off. Not so much for me, because I'm old. But for you guys, God gave everything for you. It's been dealt with. And yet, what I hear when I talk to the precious souls that I get to spend time with is they are people who are the under 20 crowd are feeling this incredible weight of anxiety and fear. And yes, it is real. Those things are real, but it has been dealt a fatal blow. You may have noticed what has happened. We asked you to name your fear. Your fear, symbolically, has been covered with the blood of Jesus. And all that it takes, you notice you can't read them. But what can you read? Faith covers fear. Faith is greater than fear. Your shirts say, faith is greater than fear. Do we live like our faith is greater than our fear? Can we live like our faith is greater than our fear? Oh, I think so. I have yet to find anything at all in the Bible that God has promised us that He has not made possible. There is not a single expectation in the Bible that He does not make doable. There is not a single promise in the Bible that He does not make good on. There aren't any. You can think forever. There aren't any. Everything that He has promised, He has made good on when He's ready. Now, He doesn't always do as fast as I want, which is kind of a bummer. But that's God's way. And I will tell you something else that I have learned in my great age. God's way is always better than my way. And I don't like to admit that. That doesn't make me happy. But it's true and it's good and it's wonderful. So we live stuck between the guilt and the doubt. Let me read this again. One criminal said, "Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself." What does that sound like to you? Doubt. That's doubt. That's a jeer.
You said you're the Christ, but what are you going to do now?
And the other guy says, don't you fear God? Okay, I don't even have to ask you what that is. It's right there. It's fear. He's afraid. What's going to happen? The guy is hanging on a cross. He has been crucified. And he is waiting to die. And the thought that goes through his mind is fear of God. That's a wise fellow. His fear of the future, knowing that his future is very short. Well, his known future. And Jesus says, today, you will be with me in paradise. He does not say, once this is over, you will be with me in paradise. He doesn't say, once we're all dead, you will be with me in paradise. Essentially, what he says, if you read it in Greek, see, there's this big loss. Those of you who don't know me, this is a real frustration I have about English. English blows. Okay? It's just not a great language. As many wonderful things as we have, the connection just doesn't work. Fortunately, we have a Siberian to help us with English. So many things do not translate correctly from Greek to English, and this is one. Okay? This is one. If you read this in Greek, it has been mistranslated. What Jesus said, if you read it in Greek, I tell you, today, you are with me in paradise. I don't know if that does anything for anybody else. That's so exciting. Today, you are with Jesus in paradise. It doesn't say you are with Jesus in the Bahamas. We've misinterpreted what paradise means. Because children, and I mean that in an adoring way, to be with Jesus is to be in paradise. Wherever you happen to be, if you are with Jesus, you are in paradise. You have it all. If you are with Jesus, wherever you happen to be, you can be in the deepest, darkest moment of your life, or you can be at your best, very favorite birthday party ever. I don't care. You can be at the Bahamas for all I care. If you are with Jesus, either place is a place of joy and of peace, because you are with Jesus there. Am I getting anybody? I tell you, today, you are with me in paradise. That's what he said to the thief on the cross, and that he's with. It's in the Bible. He said it to you. He said it to me. This is good news. And yet we live. This is real. I want to say it again because it's real. We live stuck between guilt and fear. Thieves. The past and the future. And this wonderful gift that God created us with in his amazing creativity. He created us with a memory that blows away any Mac you can buy. It's incredible, the memory that you have. And then this thing went down in the garden with our little naked buddy and his chick. Do you know the story I'm talking about? They did some things they weren't supposed to do. They ate some fruit that wasn't really for them. And it wrecked it. It was perfect. Everything was absolutely perfect. It was so awesome. And they screwed it up. And now your memory is used against you. Now your memory is a tool that is used to keep you from realizing the wonder and the glory that has been provided for you. I read somewhere when I was preparing for this, you're born with two fears. The fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. I don't really get the second one because I love loud noises. Concerts, bring it. Falling, I kind of get. We talked about that this morning. Nobody is really afraid of falling. It's landing that's a problem. So we're afraid of landing. But my point is not that. My point is this. Every other fear you have been taught. Somehow, somewhere, you learned
every other fear that you know was taught to you. You either learned it by burning yourself, falling down, or somebody got angry with you, or you felt alone, or you felt like you didn't fit in, or you tripped and fell down, or you got bitten by something. You hear what I'm saying? Your memory is used against you. It's a tool of the darkness to keep you from focusing on the gift that you have right now. Do you understand what I'm saying? So we're stuck between our guilt and all of our anxiety from the past, which our memory really struggles to let go of. And that memory translates into fear of the future. You remember what you've learned, and therefore you don't ever want to do that again. You remember what it felt like when people laughed at you, and I don't ever want to do that again. I remember what it felt like when the dog bit me, so I don't ever want to do that again. Right? I remember when I tried to make that big catch in flag football, and everybody laughed at me. I don't ever want to do that again. I remember how it felt when I broke that bone. I don't ever want to do that again. Yes? Okay. I remember when Mom got really, really mad. That was kind of fun. But I don't ever want to do that again. Can you relate to what I'm saying? And we live between these two things, and it's like warring factions between us. But Jesus Christ gave us now. Now is the day of God's favor. I just told you, fear only has as much power as you give it. Depends on where you focus. Where is your faith? Is your faith in your memory, or is your faith in Jesus Christ, who saves you from everything? Sorry, I get a little wound up. I don't think I have ever growled like that from the pulpit before. That was weird. Where is your faith? Is your faith in everything that you remember, and so therefore you think you know your future? Because that's what fear is. Fear is you saying, I know the future. I know what will happen. You don't know what's going to happen. Hallelujah. Celebrate with me that you don't know what's going to happen. My brother told me that I was a runt. He convinced me. That's not even a word. He convinced me. It is now. In Greek, it translates to a real small person. He convinced me that I was a runt. I believed it. He didn't try to. He just said it over and over. It was a habit. This is what he said. And usually there was some sort of... I need Joseph. Usually there was some sort of... I just borrowed you as a prop. I'm sorry. So I started to believe that he was right. And occasionally his friends would join in because they'd heard it. We went to the same school. My friend saw his friend say that to me. It hurt. It was bad. I felt bad. I felt small. I felt insignificant. You know what? Now I can look right over the top of his head. You want the light bulb changed? Dad calls me. You want the smoke detector battery changed? Dad calls me. Something off the top shelf? Sure, Mom. I'll be happy to get that for you. Because my mother's taller than my brother. That's a little thing. I had stuck myself in this, and it was projecting into my future. I believed that I was never going to have any ability to do anything. And I let that decide things for me. I never bothered to do any sports because I just assumed I wouldn't be any good. I assumed I had no ability because I was a runt. I gave him power that he didn't have. And he wasn't even trying to use. But I gave him that authority over me. And years of my life. And still, subconsciously, there's a pickup football game. Nah, I don't really play football. Because I'm a runt. You know what? He was wrong.
He was wrong. Haven't those two thieves stolen enough of your life already? Don't you think? Guilt and fear have stolen enough of your life already? All the power of evil could not hold Jesus back from saving you from that junk. So why do you still let it have power? Why do you still let it have a place in your life? The future says, don't you fear God? The past says, your fate is decided already. You're a screw-up. You've been hurt before. You'll get hurt again. So don't risk anything, because getting hurt hurts. So don't try, because you'll get hurt. And the future says, be afraid, be very afraid. You know what? We need to give the past and the future the crucifixion they deserve. They need to die, is what they need to do. This whole thing in your head that you believe you know, let it die. Let it die. Put it on a cross and let it die. Do not let it rob you of anything else. It's had enough of your time. Today, Jesus said, you will be with me in paradise. The day of rejoicing is supposed to be when?
Now.
Today. Where is your faith? Do you put your faith in what other people think? For as intelligent as other people are, they're stupid. Don't give them that much authority. Do you put your faith in your fear? You know what? Your fear is wrong. Your fear doesn't know the future. Your past doesn't know your future. Only God does. Don't let the thieves steal your life. Freedom from all that garbage is today. See, here's my thing. Scripture tells us that death has no sting, right? Because Jesus conquered death. So this life is not it. You believe that, right? You believe that, right? This life is not all there is. There is more. And the more is infinitely better than the now. Do you believe that? Anybody still with me? Heaven rocks. Everything that I have learned about heaven, it sounds really amazing. Without a doubt. We should be looking forward to it. But here's the thing. If death has no sting, and your long-term future has been redeemed already, meaning that if you believe in Jesus and you put your faith in Jesus, heaven, your ticket is done. Your reservation is made. As long as you continue to believe Jesus is your Savior, your place is there. Nobody can take that away from you. No fear, nobody calling you names, no mistake. Nobody's bad opinion can change that. Okay? So, if heaven is that great and is nothing but good, and the past has no power over you at all because Jesus conquered that in the past, which means that's done, then why are we so afraid? What are you so afraid of? If your faith is in Jesus and you know that he has conquered the past, the present, and the future, what is there even to be afraid of? Nothing. Nothing. Nothing can hurt you. Not long term. No, yes, snake biting you will hurt for a little while, yes. But nothing can hurt you cosmically. Like, in the big run. So what is all this about? Where is your faith? Where is my faith? What are we putting our faith in? There is nothing to fear. Let that be broken. Put the guilt of the past and the fear of the future on a cross and let it die. Take it to the feet of Jesus and let it die. Now, Let it be broken in you today. That's a choice. You realize that. Fear is a choice. Like how you respond. Anxiety is a choice. It seems like the natural choice. But it's not. Because God gave us a better choice. I don't know about you, but I think Jesus is a better choice. Pretty sure. Jesus is a better choice. Faith over fear is a better choice. And it has a promise of eternity in it. Let it be completed in you forever, today. Just decide now, today. I've had enough of being squeezed between two criminals who are stealing my life, taking all the joy and the peace and the wonder out of my life. Let them die and be free from all that nonsense. We'll have the worship team come back up because I think I'm going to go hoarse and not be able to talk in a minute. Jesus made an invitation for you from the cross. You know that, right? Jesus invited you to be free from all this junk. Be free from all this junk. Decide that you're done. You can do that. Decide that you're done. We, in celebration of this, are going to have communion. It's going to be an opportunity for you to step out of the boat that has been holding you back. This is a chance for you to publicly hear Jesus' invitation to come. Are you asking the question? Are you looking to Jesus and saying, Jesus, I want that. I want to be free from this. I want to be free from fear. I want to be free from guilt. I want to be free from all this nonsense. Don't you want that? Jesus is saying, if you're asking him that question, will you do this for me? Jesus has already answered that question. The same way he did for Peter when he said, come out on the water. Step out of the boat that is holding you hostage. That we talked about this morning. Step out of the boat. Come to Jesus. Be free. Today is a day of the Lord's favor. Be favored. Enjoy it. Be grateful.